Hello, everybody. Welcome to Glitchy Pancakes, real talk about the world of fandom. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Rob.
And we have our producer, Allie, with us. Hi, Allie.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Allie. We're doing all right. We're doing all right. What we want to talk about today is responsibility in the world of fandom. Like the responsibilities that fans have, that creators have, and really that we all have to each other as humans in the world that we enjoy of science fiction and fantasy, horror, comics, art, etc. And what that means. Joining us to talk about it, we have an excellent fantasy author and an even more excellent human being. Paige L. Christie is the author of the Legacies of Arnon fantasy series, comprising three novels so far and a fourth one coming. They are Dragon Weather, spelled D-R-A-I-G-O-N, Dragon Weather. Second book is Kingland, followed by Long Light, and the book Stormforge, concluding the series, is in the works right now. Paige is especially interested in tales that speak to women and open a space where adventure and fantasy are not all about happy endings. And I love that. That's a different thing. She also teaches belly dancing and runs a nonprofit that feeds hungry people, among many other things. She's a proud founding member of the Blazing Lioness Writers, a small group of badass women writing badass books. Welcome, Paige Christie.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you.
That's right. We appreciate you being here.
Mm-hmm.
We've asked you to be here with us today to talk about responsibilities in fandom, as Jesse put it earlier. Let's get into what that means, right? What kind of responsibilities do members of the fan community have to each other and to new people who might newly be interested in cool things that we like?
Well, you know, I started off, my first con was actually a Dragon Con. Can you believe that? What a way to start. 22 years ago this year. And I haven't missed one since, except this year, because everything's online. So everything's fine in plague-adjusted terms, right? So, the thing I fell in love with instantly about fandom, I think I started off watching, like, the Justice League on TV and Space 1999 and original Star Trek, because I'm old, right? So go way back to then, but I didn't get to a con until much, much later. And the thing that I fell in love instantly with the con communities was watching people be exactly who they wanted to be and would be every day in their lives if the world would allow them to be that.
Right.
You know, there's a freedom there. And I think when people find fandom, they oftentimes find freedom to be themselves and a confidence to be themselves that they never have. And for me, fandom was always welcoming. And maybe I was just oblivious to some of the things that I know are problematic now. But I just felt like I was home when I found fandom of all sorts. And so I took it as a responsibility to look at other people who I knew were geeks and nerds and didn't quite fit in the world the way I never fit in the world, and took it as a responsibility to accept those people as they came to me, you know, as they presented themselves to the world, as they wanted to be, as they shared the thing that they love. And to me, that was the only sensible thing to do, because this was a safe space for me to be emotionally and spiritually and intellectually, and to talk about weird things and to dress the way I wanted to dress and all the things. And for me, it was an instant responsibility to welcome other people into that world and connect with them, because I knew what it was like to be outside. And I felt like fandom, whatever that was in the moment, should be a place for that to happen. And so I have felt a great responsibility always to be welcoming and be warm and try to let everybody in and have that joy that I felt.
Go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say, whenever I am around quote unquote my people, like you guys, I tend to geek out and just go, I don't know, I get really excited. And I'm afraid sometimes that I'm going to scare people off because I get really excited.
But I think, sorry, you weren't done, Robin.
No, I was. I just wanted to cover that.
Yeah, no, that and that's important, and that's harkens back to something that Paige said about like the need to be welcoming to people,
right?
Because that, like you said, you see people being who they're able to be in those spaces, like in convention spaces, for example, that they don't normally get to be in their regular life. That's what first struck me about the first convention I went to as well, was just the happiness of seeing people walking around the halls clearly in a more comfortable place than they usually are. Mm-hmm. And because it is that way, that means that a lot of times when people are new, when people are coming to fandom communities and first encountering them, they're in an especially vulnerable place.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
They're really putting themselves out there, like their mm-hmm. real selves that they don't show people at their jobs or maybe even in their families. And it's a really vulnerable time for them. And a lot of times, you know, in fan communities, you're dealing with people who I wouldn't say have, you know, social difficulties, although that is sometimes the case, but maybe have a little more difficult time than the average person relating to the average person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's that. The aspect of being welcoming to people, I agree with that, that is a responsibility that we, especially those of us who are part of these communities, to welcome people in.
Right.
Well, and it's not just, it can be a make or break for someone, right? Mm-hmm. So if someone comes to a con or comes to some sort of event and then they feel like they're being gatekept or ostracized, then they lose interest. And the last mm-hmm. thing you want to do is, you know, mess up somebody's
right
place of belonging,
stealing their fandom.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like if you meet your hero, right, and your hero's a jerk. Yeah. You find out that right. you know, you don't want to show up to the fan thing and then find out the thing that you love, that there are a bunch of really awful people who don't want you there because you haven't been involved for 25 years or right. something, you know.
Yeah
and, you know,
that thing, go ahead.
I'm sorry, you know, I think too that I mean, part of the thing that I discovered at Dragon Con way back in the day, and I started going to Dragon Con, I wasn't there when it was in one hotel, but I was there when it was only in two, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not a crowd person. I am a small town girl, and the crowds were overwhelming for me. And this was when it was 30,000 people, not 100,000 people, you know, but, and the first time I went for one day. Mm-hmm. But what astounded me was you'd get in line for the escalator and people were like, no, after you. Oh, no, after you. Oh, no, really, after you. And I was like, who are these people? You know, it was 30,000 people being nice to each other for 4 days straight. I was like, where am I? What planet have I landed on? Now, as that particular convention has grown so enormous and they're in five hotels and the America's Mart now and on, there's less of that. And I've seen mm-hmm. things that I don't like. But the core of it is still there. And I've kind of migrated to smaller cons like Jordan Con and Multiverse and Conuga and things like that, partly to kind of get that feel back as nerddom becomes more popular.
Right.
You know, yeah. as nerddom becomes less nerdy in right. the last decade.
It has mainstream. Become more mainstream.
It's
it
become more mainstream.
Has.
You yeah. you get more people who are there more for the parties than the fandom right. sometimes.
Yeah. Yes.
And yeah. and that has been problematic. I apologize. Nobody ever calls me and now my phone is ringing.
it's perfectly fine.
I know.
We're doing, yeah. But, I mean, right now everybody's doing podcasts completely remotely from all different locations. So right. there are going to be some dogs and some thunder and some kids. And
all
some
that, dogs. All that fun mm-hmm. stuff. But,
yeah.
but, you know, I had a, I got really lucky in high school. I had an English teacher who was a complete nerd. And like, she would do things like, okay, we're going to discuss Wordsworth today. And, you know, if you're familiar with, you know, Wordsworth and poetry, and he you get into discussing pantheism and all his themes there. And she's like, okay, and the best way for me to explain this to you is it's like the Force. And I was like, I get it, you know? you know, and she's like, now we're going to talk about Arctrex. And she rolls, I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember the TVs that rolled in on the big gray wheelie things.
Yeah.
The
yes.
big, you know, and you're like, oh, we get to watch a movie. And we're watching original Star Trek so she can explain archetypes. Because it's nice. Full of you know. Nice. So I started geeking out long ago, and so for me, I think I come from a little bit different place where part of my education, my formal education, was in geekdom. And I think that was a little bit unique for me, but that same teacher was very concerned with the power of language and clarity and how you say what you mean and how you express yourself. And so she taught me that words are power and you use them wisely and you use them carefully and you use them with intention. And so that combined with that geek kind of vibe for me has always been vital in moving through the world of fandom, because you have to carry that responsibility with you, not only to welcome people into the community, but when you communicate with them about the things that you love, so that you're speaking a common language of understanding and respect. And then, like Ali said, the people who are new to that space feel they can open up, feel they can express themselves, feel they can be themselves. And that is so important. It's so important as a veteran of any fandom or just general fandom, to be open to that. And it's also important as an older fan to be open to welcoming in fandoms that I don't, quite frankly, understand. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was a kid, anime was Japanimation, and you know, I don't follow a lot of anime. I don't follow a lot of the newer fandoms, but I can respect that love and that creativity and that passion when I see it coming in, and I can watch the people gather in the corner in their, you know, their full on cosplay and doing their thing. And I have no idea what they're dressed as, but I love to watch it, you know? So part of being welcoming is not just welcoming the people that love the things that you do, but making space for the people who love the new things.
Oh, that's vital. I got so many recommendations for you. I'm going to hit her with a big one. I'm going to hit her with Princess Mononoke and just watch her ball.
That's a great place to start.
Because I haven't cried enough this weekend. Thanks.
Right.
Oh no, this is a beautiful. This is going to be a beautiful cry. You're going to enjoy this.
Okay.
It is. It's a lovely movie. And that, like, what you're saying about like making room for people who like are maybe fans of things that you're not. That's a really good point, because that's basically. Establishing that in order to be welcoming, we have to, we can't police what people are allowed to like or how they're allowed to like it. You know, like you're a fan of the original Star Trek. There are going to be people who have never seen it, but love the Next Generation. That's fine. That doesn't make anyone more of a fan than another, you know, which is that gatekeeping BS that you hear so much. And new things are going to come up and people are going to be fans of new stuff and there'll be resurgences of old things. And the thing that we all have in common, though, in my opinion, is that we're all nerds about something. And that's the thing we really have in common. It's not the individual properties or games or movies or books. It's the fact that we have such a deep interest in a particular thing, whether it's, you know, it could be nature or science or whatever it is. That's what we really all share. Ticonderoga pencils, for example. A long discussion about the best kinds of pencils recently. But no, that's actually a great example, because this is why we all get along, is because we can get so deep into something and nerd out about it that we actually can have a 45-minute conversation about different kinds of pencils, for example.
Right.
And just letting people do that is really important. Like you said, making the space where whatever you like and however you like it, you're welcome at these places.
But we're the coolest, though. We're the coolest. We are the coolest. We can have hour and a half long conversations about pencils because we're the coolest. Yep. I mean, just.
And if you too would like to be cool, you can come hang out with us and talk about pencils as long as it's Ticonderoga. I'm totally kidding. So
no, I allow
pencils.
I gatekeeping pencils.
I think we have to allow discussion of the Blackwing pencils since they have been revived.
That did come up.
Yes,
you know, it's important stuff here.
So.
You're going to let all the pencils in. Allie's going to let all the pencils in. Allie's going to let mechanical pencils in. So
I despise mechanical pencils.
Oh, we're gonna have
we have a problem.
I am so sending you mechanical pencils for Christmas.
As someone who wanted to be a manga artist when I was a kid, mechanical pencils were like a must. I mean, like when I say mechanical pencils, I don't mean those plastic craps.
Right.
Good.
The metal ones.
Right. Good.
I have the metal ones.
Zebra mechanical pencils were the thing to have.
And, I have like 20 of those in my editing bag, because that's what I edit with.
The thing. She knows what's up. See, we're talking about pencils right now. It's 15 minutes in and we're talking about pencils. We're gonna spend the rest of the show talking about
pencils. What happens when you bring up pencils? This is
what happens. I can derail a conversation like you would not believe. Yeah. It's amazing. Especially
then there are certain things with certain, like if you're talking to a group of authors, for example, just bring up fountain pens and stationery and you're just way off the rails.
We're down that I will go down that rabbit hole.
I know.
Do not go there.
Yeah.
I mean,
there are some strong opinions about it, too.
Oh, there are strong opinions about pens and pencils and stationery, yes.
Is that what we are? Gosh. Are we just people with strong opinions? Is that what fandom is?
Only when it matters.
Honestly, I think on some level, yes.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about fandom is that, okay, I'm gonna open this can and we can close it as quickly as possible, but I'm gonna open it anyway. Okay, when you start talking about, say, the final film in the Star Wars series. Or worse yet, the one before that. There are strong opinions in fandom about that, and we don't have to go into what they are, and I hold some of them. Because I am old enough to have seen A New Hope, Empire, and Jedi in the theaters. When they first released. So I have strong opinions about and I'm an author, so I have strong opinions about characterization. And so fans that came to that series later have a very different opinion on the last three movies that were produced than those of us who are 20 years older have a different reaction to those movies. And we're coming from a different place. That doesn't mean that they love them less or hate them less than I do, or vice versa. And so I think when we're talking about respect in fandom, we can have those conversations about why, you know, you did or did not like a rendering of a certain thing or a presentation of a certain thing. But again, as long as you're not saying that person's opinion or that person because of who they are does not have a right to be.
Right.
Yeah.
You can have those disagreements. You can have those disagreements, and if you're a true fan of something, you'll go, I love it, you love it, you hate it, I hate it, whatever.
Right.
But we both agree that it's a thing. You know? As long as you're not doing that gatekeeping where you say, because you feel about X differently than I do, you're not a real fan. Because you don't know what color underwear so-and-so was wearing in X scene of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you're not a fan.
Nobody gets to decide who's a real fan and who's not. Like, there's no one with the ability or the authority to do that.
It's that simple. I was in line with a woman to see James Marsters when Buffy was really hot, you know, to see him speak. And she was going on and on and on about how when they auctioned off all the clothing from the show on eBay for charity, she had gotten a pair of his boxer shorts.
Oh no! What?
And she had them with him to sign her
No, no, no.
Okay, and she was, and she's 20 years older than I am, you know, and I'm not young. So she's like, and last time I saw him, I told him I was going to bring him. Next time I saw him, and he didn't remember what scene was these were from, and I can't believe that.
Wow.
And I was just like, okay, I'm a fan. That's a different level of fan. And as weird as I thought that was, she was so excited to be there. And all she wanted to do in this weird and very bizarre way was express to this man how much she appreciated him creating this character.
Right.
Now, granted, it came from a place that I didn't quite understand. But
And possibly that, put her on a watch list or two, but
you know, it might have done. It might have done. But she was she was Douglas Adams, mostly harmless. And right. and she was but she was just so excited mm-hmm. about this thing that nobody around her understood. And the person she was presenting it to didn't understand. But for her it meant something and it had value. And everybody around her just kind of went, okay, cool, and kind of made sure she didn't like try to attack him, you know? But but within that boundary, she was safe to express that
right.
extremely bizarre thing. which the rest of us were kind of like, oh, okay. But she felt comfortable in that space, as bizarre as it was,
right.
As strange a request as it was, as strange as I found her pattern of thinking, she was in a space where she felt safe to express that. And that was really important to me thinking back on it, because it's like, she's not here to hurt anybody. She's going to see him once in 10 years. She's not really stalking him as near as we can tell, even if she does have these boxer shorts. But, and she just wants to, I don't know how to explain it. It just, it was bizarre, but it was kind of awesome at the same time, right. you know? Right. It wasn't creepy. She was just excited.
Well, and to be fair, maybe that was like the thing she could afford, or exactly. it was the only one that she could get the bid in on. And exactly. you know, I mean,
yeah, I mean, so. With a show like that, and how many people must have been bidding on it? It was right. probably the only thing yeah. she could get.
Yeah.
And so to respect that, it didn't delve into the realm of creepy. It was just pure excitement, you know? And you have a responsibility as a fan not to get creepy.
You do. You do. So. Actually, yes. let's talk about that really quickly, because there have been some really interesting things, like at book signings or meet and greets. I always appreciate it when I see someone go in to take a picture with a cosplayer, especially a female cosplayer, and they keep their hands, instead of putting it on their waist or hip or something, you'll see a guy put their hand like behind, but not
out.
On them. Mm-hmm. It's out to the side.
Yes.
I always really yep. appreciate that.
Yes. Yes. Cosplay is not consent.
Right. Absolutely. Right. Well, and just because an author or a person, an actor or an artist or whomever the creator is, just because they did a thing that someone loves doesn't give that someone permission to
touch them. Right.
Well, you don't actually know them.
Right.
I mean, you know a character that they play and you might have a distant crush on, you right. know, the actor, actress, writer, whatever, but you don't touch them. You don't actually know that person.
Yeah.
That's right. Right. Yeah. You don't impose on their spaces. That's what I think the term is parasocial relationships.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or that it's created where you'll have like, you know, there might be an author you really like and you've read, you know, three of their books and you love them and you follow them on Twitter and all this stuff. And it can become easy to feel like I know this person, but it's, you don't. And you still have to respect the boundaries of these people as if you're meeting them for the first time when you meet them, because you are meeting them for the first time and mm-hmm. they're meeting you for the first time. And you have to treat it that way, because it's very easy to fall into the parasocial thing. We see that happen a lot. And that's how, you know, that's how stalker type behaviors begin.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Is with a parasocial relationship where they feel an unwarranted and unearned connection or sense of entitlement to a particular person. That they don't actually have that connection to.
Yeah, no, and it's easy to, you know, I don't fangirl a lot because people are people. Mm-hmm. So I have fangirled over certain people. I fangirled over Lance Hendrickson. I kind mm-hmm. of, when I met Lance That's Hendrickson. Fair. And he was at a con and he was signing his autobiography, which is called, if you haven't read it, it's called Not Bad for a Human. It's fabulous. and I was having him sign that book. And I asked him if he would be willing to give me a hug, because I was so excited to meet him. And he agreed to that. But I asked him. I did yes. not hug him.
Yes.
Right.
You know, and he agreed, and he gave me a hug, and I was all squee. But, sure. as one would be. But, you know, you make that request. You don't mm-hmm. just assume.
Right.
And that's your responsibility as a fan to the things that you're a fan of.
Right.
is to not drive those people crazy. So they want to keep coming back so you can see them.
Well, and this sort of rounds about to, so safety concerns on both sides, right? So fans or creators, both of those groups will not participate in a space if they feel unsafe.
Right.
So, you know, what are things that we can do in order to help people feel like they're okay and this area is safe for me to be, no matter, you know, race or gender or orientation, whatever. So what are some of those things we could do?
Don't invite the known walking dingleberries to participate.
Right. Hey, we had a whole episode on that.
Yeah, we did a whole thing on that. Don't invite the, don't say, well, they probably won't do it this time. No,
it doesn't. Nope, yeah, they're going to do
don't
it.
Invite them. Don't invite them.
Yeah.
And call it out if you see it happening, no matter who they are. You know, and have clear plans in place so that people are new to the space have a clear understanding of what their options are if something goes sideways. Sure. You know, that's vital. I think when you're new to an event, especially, or a book signing, maybe it's a different or an art opening, you're not going to have necessarily prolonged exposure and there may not be rules in place or, or situations that have happened before publicly, you know? So I think it depends on the venue that you're in as to what can be done about it. But at cons, there are lots of options to make things clear. In the smaller venues, like if you've got a problematic author that maybe the bookstore doesn't know is problematic, that is doing a signing at a bookstore, and I, as a person who may be local to that bookstore, know that there's a problem, maybe I call the owner and say, you may want to take this into account.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
it seems important.
You know, or an artist. Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
I like what you're saying there about how, like, speaking up about things, because it definitely seems like, in terms of harassment in particular, that the way to make spaces and events feel safe to people and actually be safe to people is by making harassers and abusers feel unsafe in showing up there in the first place, like make them feel like they are not going to be excused or given any quarter or allowed to get away with things. That they need to feel unsafe so that everyone else can feel safe. They need to feel unwelcome because they
unwelcome.
Are.
that's the better term. It's not unsafe because no one's actually impinging on their rights either. It's unwelcome.
That's a good distinction, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I mean is unwelcome. And the safety thing, I think, also extends beyond harassment and abuse, which are, you know, issues that we've definitely addressed at some length before and continue to. But safety in terms of just feeling like you are represented and welcomed and that a particular space is created with you in mind and included.
Yep.
And I think like events can do a lot as far as just be thoughtful about the space you're creating. Like look at what is the wording of the communications you put out? What is the iconography that you use? You know, when people look at the totality of what you're putting out there, are they seeing something that reflects that they have been considered and that they're going to be welcome?
Right.
So I think sometimes you have to do that actively because a lot of people, especially people from, you know, the LGBTQ community, for example, non-white people, I feel like often used to spaces being such that when they look at it, it's like, I don't know. Like it needs to be actively affirmed that yes, we do want you here.
That's right.
For some
spaces like con spaces, that could mean making sure that your guest list is diverse. Like the authors that you are presenting, that's diverse. The people running the event don't all look exactly alike. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the people making decisions and the people who have been invited as to be showcased as professionals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's vital. And I I'm a white girl from a small town, New England, and you know, and it's one of those things that it's a fact that where I grew up was lily white and pretty darn sheltered. And I have had to have several reckonings with myself over paying attention to things that I was never personally faced with you know, mm-hmm. but as I present my work, my writing to the world now, I have a responsibility to make sure that it's accessible to more than people who look like me, you know, yeah. and,
right.
and thus, like, one of the things I do, I don't describe any of my characters in detail. You may get their height, like you may get their hair color.
Right.
You rarely even get eye color. Cause mm-hmm. I don't do facial features. I don't do those kind of things. I don't do skin tones because I want people to read my books and be able to see those characters as they want to see them.
Right.
You know, I don't want the white default, you know, that publishing mm-hmm. defaults to. And I am not educated enough in the world, and I have not had the experiences to say, to write all my characters from a point of view of a Black person or a Latinx person or, you know, a person of different heritage and social experience than me. But I can not force the me of the world onto my reader. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, that's,
and I'm,
that's a pretty nuanced take on it, actually, that you don't like, because that's the thing is right. like what characters you can write. And it sounds like you're being, you know, careful not to take up the space of telling other people's stories rather than letting them tell their stories.
Yeah.
But like you said, you're also not forcing, you know, you're not forcing whiteness into as the default in your stories either.
Yeah. But as when people see me and I try that, but when people see me like on a panel or something, you know, I'm a pasty Celt, you know, there's no way around it. And so they can make an assumption about what my characters are like based on my look. Mm-hmm. But if they don't see me and they read the book first, my hope is that there's more space there for people right. to fill in those mm-hmm. visions of the characters in their own way. And in fact, one of my characters in the book, I actually wrote, I don't usually envision actors or actresses or anything like that, or people physically when I write, but, mm-hmm. but Gina Torres is one of, I see her in that space, and I rarely do that, but, and there are things that I try to do in my writing responsibly. I try to be careful with word choice. Like, and I don't think I always succeed in this, but I try to be very careful to never use the word Black in my work as
right.
as a thing that means something negative.
Negative. Mm.
Right. That right. you know, mm-hmm. that it's never a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I'll say something is cold and blue with darkness, or I'll say something is gray, or but I try not to use that particular word mm-hmm. because you just don't, language is powerful and you have to take ownership of it. And you have to understand the meaning that it has. There was an exercise I did with some kids in a writing class a few years ago where I wrote 5 colors on the board. I wrote Black, brown, white, yellow, and red. And I asked them to give me a list of words, list of things that described all, you know, what is black, what is brown, you know, and white was like sunshine and snow, and yellow was like flowers, and brown was like puppy poop. And, you know, I mean, it was all these things. And then I was like, okay, so if you're a person who has been called this color all your life and you're writing stories, and you're using these words, and these are the connotations that you as the author see in the words, what do you think your reader's going to hear? Mm-hmm. You know? And so.
And it just perpetuates negative associations with.
And it's a simple exercise, but these were like junior high kids. And I there was a couple of them that you could see the light go on. That was a good day. But, right. And so as a creator, I feel creators have an extra responsibility to present the world with something that's different than what we live in every day. Mm. You know, like if you're writing a fantasy novel and you've got 2 guards marching the prisoner to the dungeon, do the guards have to be male?
Right.
Right.
You know, it does the doctor you know, have to be male? Does the right. does the sword fighter have to be male? Does the sword fighter have to be young? Does is the right. princess, can the princess be 60 and her and you're, you know, like Prince Charles is, how old is mm-hmm. Prince Charles and the Queen of England still in charge? Does the princess right. have to right. be young and beautiful? Can the prince and the right. princess be 70? You know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, clearly. That's a good point about how, about presenting, like, because we're talking about, you know, writing science fiction and fantasy, but, you know, also comics and horror and things like that. And you mentioned presenting something that's different than the world we live in every day, which is exactly what, I mean, the science fiction right. and fantasy are about alternate worlds and alternate futures and alternate possibilities. It drives me nuts to see people get up in arms about seeing science fiction and fantasy stories written in a way that is more inclusive of right. traditionally marginalized groups. Because I'm like, so you're okay with a completely separate planet where, you know, where dragons exist and all these other things happen, but you can't stomach a Black lead character. Like, that's where right. you draw the line right. at believability. Like, that's crazy. And that's a thing that I saw a quote from N.K. Jemisin earlier, who said that in one of her blog posts that SFF, science fiction and fantasy, is just as flawed as the rest of the world when it comes to bigotry and marginalization. Right. But unlike the rest of the world, SFF thinks it's progressive.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
That's wild because, and I think she's got a point there because people end up hiding behind that. Like, there were, you know, this is the literature of ideas and this is, you know, the literature of imagination. And, okay, great. So why does it stop at, you know, and still allow bigotry and marginalization to happen in the stuff that's created and in the communities?
Why don't we imagine better?
Yeah.
Right. You know, yeah. why don't we take the, like, you know, for all the flaws of the original Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry wanted us to envision a world that was better, where right. we mm-hmm. were better, you know, mm-hmm. did it hit all the high notes? No, but for its time, it was amazing.
You're right. You're
I mean,
right.
O'Hara was fourth in charge of basically what do you call it? Aircraft carrier, you know, yes. I mean, come on. You know, I mean, hello. So we can imagine better, you know,
right.
women like you can't have women in the battle scene. They can't handle a sword. Dude, women have always fought. And besides, it's not history. It's fantasy. You know, I can have whatever I want. All my people can have purple hair and 6 feet. It right. does not matter. You know,
even in real life, women fought.
I yes, mean, women have always fought. I
mean, the samurai, they were women who were samurai. I mean, obviously, I don't get that. I don't get it at all. I don't get how people can just forget history in general. And no, I do get it. It's just like a moment for me. It just dawned on me just like that. Because some people want to continue to hold on to the narrative and the power. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Exactly.
That's what it is. Like black villains. I would love to see a black villain who makes me angry because he's an asshole. Not mm-hmm. a mm-hmm. black dude who's a bad guy.
Yep. Yep.
Give me a fucking cunning, smart black villain
mm-hmm.
in literature that makes me want to go after him with my hands. But not because he's
because of who he is, not well, because exactly. of how he looks.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because of yeah. who he is, not because yeah. of how he looks. Correct.
Yeah, and you mentioned about like the way to just preserve, you know, the power and hold on to the narrative. That ties back to what we were saying about like about the responsibilities that we have, because and this is just my opinion. I want to hear what y'all think about it too. But when we're talking about not gatekeeping and being welcoming, you know, and this stuff as a responsibility, that's because the underlying assumption is that we want our fandom to be a better place for people to be. We want right. mm-hmm. new blood in it. We want people to not be afraid to be able to join it and contribute whatever they have. So going from that assumption, it very much does seem like a responsibility to be willing, make yourself willing to let go of the narrative and let go of the power in the industries and everything like that, and let it go where it will go if it's set free to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And let it involve and include who it will include if you don't stand in the way. Yeah. And let's see what comes out of it.
Yeah. And it may mean accepting in some ways that the thing you loved has moved on from you as right. you were when you first yes. experienced it.
Yes.
And, you know, and then you get into the whole, now I'm getting old and am I relevant anymore? And, oh my God, I'm mortal. And, you know, right. so, I mean, but that's all tied together. It's all tied together when you tie your identity to a thing that you love, be it politics mm-hmm. or fandom or all of these things, it's hard, especially as you get older, to step away from that thing and say,
right.
maybe this doesn't belong to me in the way it did before. Maybe mm-hmm. this world has moved on from me. It doesn't mean I still can't love it, but right. I do have to make room for what's coming next. And that is right. not easy. You it's know,
you can also go enjoy what's coming next too. It's not like you should right. give up your fandom just because things have changed. Like go check out the new shit. There's right. plenty
learn about
of
the new stuff. Learn exactly. about the new stuff.
And I think there's a fear there, especially if you've created an identity that has in fandom, you've created an identity. Like I know that the Harry Potter crowd is in trauma right now because that was so formulative for so many people through their teenage years. And those are powerful years to be reading something that speaks to you. And, you know, I was in my 30s when those books came out and I waited till they were all out and then just kind of binged them. And they were problematic for me on a lot of levels, but I was older. Mm-hmm. But I could see the power in those for the kids that were reading them as they were the ages of those characters, as they were releasing. Mm-hmm. And to see what's happening now to that fandom and the reckoning that they're having to go through is it's really heartbreaking to watch, but it also is kind of freeing for them to be like, okay, I don't have to define myself by this anymore. If you can find your strength not to define yourself by something that you loved and to recognize the issues with it, then you are more free to find other things that as you move through your life are maybe better. I was a huge fan of Orson Scott Card when I was in my teens and 20s.
Same.
Well, yeah. That's problematic now, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. And I don't buy his books anymore and I don't recommend his stuff anymore. Yep. Can I deny that they influenced me in my youth? Can I deny that the power of his words and the way he told stories influenced me as a writer? No, I cannot. But recognizing the problem gave me the opportunity to move on to something better, to find new things to like that were less problematic in my mind and more responsible for the stories they were telling, other authors, other artists. Mm-hmm. And so if people are willing to let go and look at things as an opportunity, whether it's because you're aging out of the cool thing or the cool thing is not quite as cool as it was 5 years ago and there's no track for it at your con anymore or whatever, and experience those new things, then you give yourself not only the opportunity to welcome someone into fandom, but you give yourself the opportunity to re-experience being welcomed mm-hmm. by something new. And that can be really powerful as well.
That's a really cool way to look at it seems like what we've touched on a lot is as far as like the responsibilities that we have as fans and as creators, a lot of it really comes down to being open-minded and being respectful and, mm-hmm. you know, being right. willing to change over time and not identify yourself by being a gatekeeper. I mean, quit guarding the gate and just go through it and see who's in there on the other side.
Exactly.
And get to know them a little bit. You know, there's pretty cool people there if you don't spend all your time trying to keep folks out.
We live in a world where we live in our world where a wormhole can open up and some shit can happen. Embrace it. You embrace that. Embrace everything else that comes with it. I mean, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And if people want to get involved, man, hold their hands, bring them in and say, mm-hmm. man, what are you into? This is what I like. Check this old stuff out too, because this is cool as well.
Yeah.
You're right. You're all right.
And, you know, and we kind of brought it up before we started recording, but and it bears mentioning again with the loss of Chadwick Boseman this weekend. Speaking of opening up doors and giving people access and allowing people joy. Every role that man took, you know, we're in fandom, so, you know, our minds go to Black Panther, but, you know, he played Jackie Robinson and and Marshall and, you know, all these things. And the way he moved the world and the doors he opened and held open in people's hearts and for people who had never seen that vision of themselves.
Yeah.
We have suffered a great loss. The world has suffered a great loss. And someone who took responsibility for that seriously, you know, not that I knew the man, but it strikes me that he was one that did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything we know about him says that he absolutely did that. He took his responsibility as an actor in every role. But like you said, we're in fandom, so we, you know, Black Panther is what's going to be most familiar to a lot of people. That was an opportunity to show millions upon millions of people a version of themselves, a representation of themselves on screen that they never had been able to see before. That was a massive responsibility. And he absolutely met that challenge and did it as well as I think any living person could have done. Since we're talking about the responsibilities that we have in fandom, that is a fantastic example of someone taking their responsibility seriously. Thanks for bringing that up. That's been a really good talk about just kind of how to be responsible fans and how to treat creators, you know, how to be respectful of each other and the responsibilities that creators, authors, actors, everybody have to this community. Because as we're always talking about, if everyone will put in the work and start trying to understand each other better and treat each other with more respect, be more inclusive, it becomes a better place for all of us. And that's what we really all care about when it comes down to it.
That's right. I mean, we make everyone flourishes when we do this. I mean, we learn new things from different cultures. We get to experience fandom in its fullest when we're accepting of other people. And we just are in those spaces, and we let people be who they're going to be in those spaces. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. Thank you very much, Paige. We appreciate you joining us to come and talk about this with us. You brought some great points to us. Giving me some stuff to think about.
Yes.
So where can people find you online? They need to before you tell us, I want to tell everybody, go buy Paige's books.
Yes, please.
three out of the four in the Legacies of Arnon series are out so far, starting with Dragon Weather, spelled D-R-A-I-G-O-N Weather. You got to read these books. We're going to put the links in the show notes so that you can go pick them up.
We'll have
the
links. That's right.
Get in on it. The fourth book's going to be coming out to conclude the series pretty soon. So it's time to go ahead and start catching up on that. But where can people find you online, Paige?
Well, I am at PaigeLChristie.com. I'm pretty much Paige L. Christie everywhere, because if I don't put the L in, I get called Christie Paige. So I am Paige L. Christie on Twitter, Paige L. Christie on Facebook, PaigeLChristie.com is my website. You can sign up for my newsletter there. Sometimes I drop some deleted scenes and things in the newsletter. If you're wondering what the books are about, the books, this particular series is feminist westerns with dragons. So they're a bit different. So I hope that people enjoy them. They seem to be well received so far, which is super fun. And you can also find me. I'm going to be a guest at Multiverse Virtual, I believe, coming up. Yeah. And if it happens in the spring, I'll be at JordanCon as a guest. And then we'll see after that when the world's not on fire. So,
right. Yeah, no kidding. You announce your convention appearances and stuff like that on your website.
And my newsletter on my Facebook. Yeah. So you'll be able to track me down. And if you want to email me with any questions, it's PaigeLChristie@gmail.com. Because like I said, it's PaigeLChristie everywhere. So, I'm pretty easy to track
very
down.
Very consistent.
Yeah.
What was your name? What was your name again? What was your name?
Bob. My name is Bob. So
I'm Fox. It's nice to meet you, Bob. I'm Fox.
Oh, Fox Curly. You know we're gonna have to create a Fox Curly Twitter account because you need that.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I'm all in for Fox Curly as long as the Writers at the Bar virtual event takes place at the Salty Smelt. I'm good.
If we do that, yes, we'll make sure that. we'll make sure people know how much you lobby for that. if you want to, anybody wants to find me online, this is Jesse. It's Jesse_A_Adams on Twitter. Rob, where are you online?
If you want to find me online, I am at EI Blackout. That is IAIBLACKOUT on Twitter. I'm on Facebook somewhere. Same dude, same name. Allie, where are you? What can we find you at, Allie?
You can find me at, I'm Allie911 pretty much everywhere. So that's my Twitter, that's my Facebook, that's all the things. And I'll just put in a plug for the convention that Jesse and I chair called Multiverse. So if you want to find us and come and you know, experience a con online, it's multiversecon.org. That's and right. We will be all online the weekend of October the, oh God, 16th when is ours? Is it the 16th? Okay.
Yes, 16th or 18th.
Time has no meaning.
So. And what's the
price? This is why you help us with producing, because somehow I was going to completely forget to even mention our upcoming right. convention that we put so much time and effort into. So thank you for catching all the things that we drop in the process of everything else. so you can find us, you can stream our episodes of Glitchy Pancakes from glitchypancakes.com directly, or find us on your favorite podcast app. We're on pretty much all of them now. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Glitchy Pancakes. We have some fun on there, so go give us a follow and keep up with stuff we're doing. We announce new episodes on there. If you've got questions or suggestions or comments or anything like that, email us at cakespod@gmail.com. That's cakespod@gmail.com. That's how to find us. And thank you again, Paige. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will catch you all next time. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Night.
Later.